First of all, thank you for attending. Thank you for both residents here in the monastery and also all of you online who live various places on the globe and come here to join us and support this particular spiritual path of the Buddha's Dharma. Also, thank you for supporting us financially. Please continue to do that as you are able. And thank you, and thank you, and thank you. This evening's Dharma talk is titled Shikantaza and Mindfulness. I sometimes mention these in when I'm teaching various topics, but I don't know if I've given a talk on that, on those two different ways of training the mind, those two different awareness practices, which are both completely valid. I'm not here to say just because I teach Shikantaza doesn't mean I don't sometimes situationally teach mindfulness to some people. Shikantaza is not superior. Mindfulness is not superior. Tantric practice, though they sometimes claim it is not superior. I practiced it. Might not have practiced it as much as some people have. But, and also, someone can say I'm teaching, that they are teaching Shikantaza and not be saying what I'm saying. Someone else can be teaching mindfulness and not be talking about it the way I'm about to talk about it. And someone can also be say that they are practicing the Vajrayana or tantric ritual practice, goes by different names, the diamond vehicle, the Vajrayana, which is indestructible, and also deity yoga, where you can't find your wisdom, so you have to have a, or you need to have, or it is recommended that you have an image that you talk to or relate with that represents your wisdom mind. Perhaps might talk about those foundation practices, especially the four foundations called Nundro, which is 100,000 prostrations, 100,000 offerings, 100,000 repetitions of the Vajrasattva mantra, 100,000 offerings to the mandala, and 1,000,000 repetitions of Guru Yoga. That's just the foundation before you actually receive the actual sadhana. So it's a very, very complicated and a long, very involved practice. Saying that, and that's something I've practiced. So saying that, I'm going to go back and first talk about Shikantaza, and then I'll talk about mindfulness. And I'll try to be as clear as I can about these. And then I'll receive some questions and endeavor to, I'll at least respond, but I'll endeavor to clarify any difficulties or misunderstandings that you may have. And you perhaps can clarify some of mine. Well, Shikantaza is a Japanese word that means just precisely this. I'll say it again. Shikantaza. Translated out of the Japanese, might be done differently by different translators, but my understanding is that it is just precisely this. So whatever's in front of you, that is your object of meditation. A little bit different when I start to talk about mindfulness. But Shikantaza means that whatever shows up, that is your practice. So if you're sitting symmetrical, as I teach, this is the cosmic mudra, very traditional, goes back to ancient times, left over right with the thumb slightly touching, forming an oval between your thumbs and first fingers. Sits in your lap. It also can sit in your hara, or the Japanese reference to this midpoint. You're right in the middle of your stomach, sometimes called the tantien. Some teachers say, hold that position, don't move. Stay there for what, 20 minutes or 40 minutes? Those are the two different popular or well-known time lengths of time, and they're pretty strong about teaching it that way in different zendos or by different teachers and so on. So the idea is don't move, don't scratch your nose, don't do anything, hold very still. That's the way that is taught. I teach it, sit down, hold still, sit symmetrical, or put your hands on your knees. Sometimes people have trouble with their back if they're doing this kind of holding. You can also put a pillow under your hands. You don't have to use your muscles to hold that up. That's taught differently by different people, and they call it Shikantaza. So I'm just letting you know, maybe you know that already. But if you read different places, you'll say, well, that isn't what Sokazan says, well, Sokazan says this, and Russell Banks says something else. So the way I teach this is you're holding very still, and in that way, through contrast, you can watch what the mind is doing, what is happening in what we call the consciousness, the six sense fields and their objects, including the mind. In mind, thoughts arise. In sound, or in hearing, thought, sounds. In taste, tastes, sense of taste, sense of touch, feelings, all of that. A little complicated, but pretty simple and straightforward. All of those situations, all of those organs receive, including the mind. The mind receives thoughts. Mind does not produce thoughts. This might be a little challenging for you, but you could contemplate that or relate to it or think about it or disagree. Go ahead. Do whatever you want. I'm looking at it. I'm not talking out of an opinion on something. That doesn't give me some special credential necessarily. You can certainly disagree. So Shikhen Dao is a very radical, meaning go to the root, very minimal, meaning simplify, awareness practice where you there's not much there to do, therefore it's very challenging because you get very little, if any, feedback that you're getting anywhere or that all the hours you're spending facing the wall are helping you be more aware or be more less confused. All of that because what it is addressing is a very fundamental nature of consciousness, which is really kind of out of the view of ego. The ego mind is I talk about it as a ball, a fist, a paranoid aspect of consciousness. Consciousness will find whatever form it needs. And if some aspect of consciousness tied to a body-mind complex called a human being, if that gets freaked out, it could curl up into a ball because it's threatened. And so then if that happens, just watch that. Just observe that. Observe. And if whenever something arises in the mind that is challenging or in some way, or maybe magnetic or seductive or pulling you this way or that, just observe. And if commentary starts to show up in the mind relative to subconscious gossip or just daydreaming, just observe that. There's nothing to correct. I'll say that again. When you're practicing Shikhen Tao, there's nothing to correct. You might say that returning is a form of correction, but not really. It's about not maintaining something, but returning. What do you return to? Very simple. Sit straight, sit symmetrical, and just receive. Not a lot of instructions there. But what happens in the mind, in the consciousness, is it can go this way or that way. It can push, pull, passion, aggression, ignorance, that amazing triangle of poison and confusion and paranoia. So this is an awareness practice, not an accomplishment practice. It's not about getting something. If it's about anything, it may be about losing something. And that is not easy. I've thought of titling the next Dharma talk, you might not like what I'm about to say. The Buddha probably had that preamble when he taught the first noble truth, life of suffering. But it's genuine. If you've done this for a long period of time, you see that was an amazing statement to make 2,500 years ago to a group of young people. But it's true. Anybody, meditation or not, has been around for 70 or 80 years, or probably doesn't even hear that teaching because it's very difficult to be a living being. Even if you have riches and talent and live in a wonderful place, safe from danger, safe from bombs, safe from lack of food and those things. Shikhen Tao, just precisely this, whatever shows up, that's it. And if you add to it, if you make a comment or elaborate on what's showing up, but worry about it, go this way or start to add story upon top of story on top of story, then that is your object of meditation. Shikhen Tao has anything that shows up in the mind stream is the object of meditation. I don't care how it feels. I don't care how you think about it or your ideas, your any commentary, that immediately turns into the object of meditation. This takes years to do this. You're not going to be able to do this in a few months, let alone a few years. It takes a long time. Maybe not as long as it's taken me. Maybe you're a quick study. Ha, ha, ha. There's no quick study for the spiritual path. You're not going to get, because you can't get somewhere. This is not about gaining things. It is about seeing deeply into the nature of what is sometimes referred to as reality. Belief in a self, belief in an other. Shikantaza will help you cut through the self-deception and the confusion that the ego mind tends to generate in order to protect itself from an enemy that is not even true, not even real, paranoia. So we'll go back and forth a little bit. I'll go to mindfulness practice, commonly called just training the mind, which I use that word also, training the mind. The way I teach it is a little different than mindfulness. But as I said at the beginning, I may teach mindfulness practice to a particular person, not because they're lacking or they don't have the ability to do shikantaza. No, they may need to do that in a certain way or for a certain length of time. But I usually start out with shikantaza. That's what I teach directly. That's what I teach in the 108 meditations and also in the meditation primer. So mindfulness practice, or shamatha, is the Sanskrit, and the Tibetan is shine, and those are quite often tied together, shine and laktung. Shine is calm abiding. And I'm going to talk specifically about how I was taught that over half a century ago. So shine and laktung is mindfulness awareness, or shamatha vipassana. And this is taught other ways. Lots of different styles and methods for teaching what is often referred to as mindfulness practice. And it is valid. It's not worse, it's not better. That whole area is just, it's not helpful to think in that way. What works better? Should I practice this or that? If you ask that question, there's one person you should ask that to, and that's your teacher, if you have one. If you don't have one, then maybe you don't need one. I'm here to promote anything. I only can speak out of how it looks here. I would not be sitting here if it weren't for my teachers. There's just no way this could happen without help of someone who had seen what this is and pointed at that. So mindfulness, shamatha, or shine, calm abiding, or resting in tranquility is another Tibetan way that Tibetans talk about it. But this is all over the place. And quite these days, you aren't going to hear shikantaza very much, but you will hear mindfulness. But lots of therapists teach that. Good idea. There are people who are not therapists and are not monks, and I'm not sure whether they consider themselves Buddhist. In some cases, they do. In some cases, they don't. There are Advaita practitioners who teach different kinds of awareness practice. So there's lots of it. It's just all over the place. I want to concentrate, if I can, on maybe differentiating or helping you understand the difference between shikantaza and mindfulness, and why I teach shikantaza initially and possibly might teach mindfulness practice. So mindfulness practice is just having some kind of object of meditation. It can be scanning the body. It can be, traditionally, it can be taught looking at an object. And it can be an imaginary object. It could be an actual object in front of you, like a rock or an image of the Buddha or something else. Or it could be watching the breath come and go, watching the diaphragm move. And one of the ways that I was taught, a way that I was taught early on, was to follow the out-breath. Other teachers, and especially in the Buddhist tradition, teach that a lot tighter. For instance, the 17th Gyalwang Karmapa teaches Urgen Trinley Dorje teaches that as counting the breath. It's a very, very tight practice where when the breath goes out, you say in your mind's ear, one. When it comes back in, you say one. When it goes back out, you say two. When it comes back in, you say two. You do that up to 10 and you return to one. The same thing. So you're not only tracking the in-breath or the out-breath as I was trained, you're also not spacing out anywhere. You're just going to track that no matter where it's at, and you're going to record it in your, fourth skandha. You can fish around here and find for where that's showing up in consciousness if you want to. And so it's a very strong structure that immediately triggers the self-consciousness that is looking for results and success and failure. So the ego mind is brought to the fore of I'm not able to do that, or I'm doing that really good. I can just follow my breath no matter what. So getting a really strong me credential there. All that being said, going the other direction is failing at it and not having such a good and easy time of it and having it be really difficult. All of that is valuable. It's all valuable. It's all awareness. And perhaps that may be the way in which your teacher might be training you to do this. I think it's necessary to have a teacher so that you're not kind of winging it all the time. Not that you couldn't, but even the Buddha had teachers. Even most people who are teaching this had some kind of a teaching experience with another human being. So the idea and the way I was trained was follow the breath. And when you notice that you've been distracted by going off on a thought pattern or a daydream or something like that, you label that thinking and return to the breath. Pretty powerful way of working with a mind training shamatha. Mindfulness, awareness, shamatha, vipassana, shini, loktong. So, and you can tighten that up and you can make it fairly casual and loose. If it gets too casual and loose, then it's getting closer into the area of what is referred to as shikantaza. Again, I want to stress this because it's very easy for people to think that, to just assume that I'm against something I practiced for 3 decades. Not against that. I just don't teach it initially. The people I talk to are people I meet. They aren't people in a book. You might read my book, you might not. But if you read my book, go ahead. But in order to practice, you might need to speak to that person. Maybe it's me, maybe it's someone else you talk to or you're studying under. That would be up to you. You should trust yourself. That doesn't mean believe your thoughts. But look closely at what's coming and going in the mind stream. Sit a lot. Making assumptions or having beliefs and opinions about things, that all they do is just cover you up. Cover up your instinct to see what is true. Cover up your wisdom mind. I'll say it one more time. There is no right and wrong here. There is no better meditation. The tantric practitioners don't have some kind of a, even though they say that if you practice tantra, you can attain enlightenment in one lifetime. Well, you can attain enlightenment in one lifetime and never even meditate, but it's very unlikely because the causes and conditions that arise as this particular person, this woman, this man or any person is dependently arisen. It's not just what happened when you were 4 years old. It's what happened way before you came into this particular incarnation. And I say often, I'll say again, don't believe me, but consider it. I'm not saying believe anything. No, look at this yourself. Look at your dreams. Look at your nightmares. Look at the things that come into the mind without even being beckoned or asked for, whether you're while you're sleeping or when you're wide awake. Look at the interactions when you meet 10 or 15 different people, and some people you immediately don't like. You haven't talked to them, you haven't heard their voice, you don't like them. And another person you feel really drawn to, not just because one is beautiful and one is homely. Something else is happening there. Consciousness always finds its own form. And the ownership there is not, but I'm not saying that everything has something that owns something else. It's just the only way I can think of to talk about the consciousness that is showing up everywhere as situations, objects, things, thoughts, emotions, patterns, memories. It looks linear. It looks like a past and a future. This is a misunderstanding. Good luck with that. So going back to the two, Shikantaza, there, as I said, there are lots of different ways, and there are people that call it Shikantaza or call it mindfulness and talk in different ways. And before we go any further, I want to say that we're going to be we're trying to fundraise right now to build next door here. We own a series of buildings to change this to the building next door we call the aviary, just because it's quite big and there are drawings of birds on the walls. I think that's what brought that about. So I didn't know what to call it, so I saw a bird on the wall, and it used to be a children's furniture store or a toy store. So that's there. We're going to build a community mindfulness center. This may have Buddhist teachings happen there, but not necessarily. They may be just teachings on training the mind, just like I've taught I and other people, Chiezan, Unyo, Junchu. Pardon me if I miss somebody that's gone into the drug rehab and taught meditation to people who have no intention of being Buddhist. You can go in and just teach people to train their mind. Just sit down, hold still, and watch the movement. Some people in there need to hear the Shikantaza version, and some people need to hear the mindfulness version, and some people might need to do something else. They might have to leave that rehab center and maybe forget what I've said, but go a different direction and maybe train their mind in a totally different way. I don't know. As I said, right and wrong or extra, those are about controlling people. That's not a good idea to control anyone. And that goes for Dharma teachers. I don't care if they're Tibetan lamas or not. So that doesn't mean that a student of awareness or mindfulness wouldn't have a person or a mentor or a teacher who they would give permission to teach by asking that person to function as their teacher. And then you should be very careful about doing that. And the person who functions as a teacher should be very respectful of the person who asks that and not just step into their territory and try to order them around or manage them, like has been done in ancient times or past centuries. So next door, hopefully have people just who are in this town of 50,000 or whatever it is, a very small kind of a backward area. Doesn't have all the big factories left and went to Brazil, I guess, or out west. So it used to be a strong industrial place. It's lacking now. There's not much here as far as job opportunities, some, but not much. So I'm interested in helping this town, helping to introduce this town to a kind of mindfulness practice or meditation practice that can help them. They don't have to be Buddhist. They don't have to come and be monks or even practice in the monastery at all. So that kind of a visionary situation that shows up for me is very mutable, and it shifts quite a bit as we go along. It's changed right midstream several times, and it's changing now. I don't want to disappoint the architects again after we had them totally design this end of the building to be a library and a residence and all of that. That's set aside, and now we're doing this over here because of Unyo. Isn't it your fault? Mm-hmm. It's your fault.
Actually, it's the Presbyterians. They wouldn't sell us their room.
The Presbyterians have a big, beautiful building they never use, and a parking lot all the way around it, which they let us use quite a bit of the time. But it's a big, beautiful building. We tried to buy it from them, and they wouldn't. So we're going to build our own building. And that's when we do that, then they're going to want to sell us that building. And what are we going to have to do? We're going to have to buy it, I guess. I don't know. So anyway, I can stop the funny business here and respond to your questions about chicken tata. I feel like there's aspects of it I've left out. Maybe your questions will bring us out further. So you can see that the way I understand these two kinds of practices is not about one's better than the other. It's just not true. You may practice, you may be a student of mine and practice mindfulness. You may practice following the breath. We may talk about what you're working with in your mind stream, and that may be the practice that seems the most suitable for you. I start out with chicken tata because it is not only the simplest, but it is closer to the ultimacy of what this is to be consciousness in the form of a human being, regardless of anybody's religious orientation. Questions, please? Yes.
Shenshi bowing. Does mindfulness practice have a goal?
So it could be set in different ways by people who teach that, but to be more clear, to be reasonable, to not fight with yourself or others, to be more peaceful. There might be countless ways that I'm not even mentioning that might be. So Sokaran, did your people that taught you mindfulness when you were studying more in that way, was there goal orientation there?
Full enlightenment.
Full enlightenment. And how did they define that?
So grand bowing. Free from negativity.
Okay. And so free from negativity. Did you meet any people who were free from negativity? Okay. And would you say I say free from negativity? What do I say?
Not separate from negativity.
Not separate from anything. It's heaven and hell. And if you're trying to grab heaven and keep hell away, then you're going to go in circles because those are just states of mind. So you can actually, if you see what this is, you don't care how you feel because you are totally devoted to this, to saving all beings. Other people come first, even though they might not think you're treating them that way when you give them a hard time. More about your experience? Very good. Senshu? Yeah.
Beyond knowing, does a mindfulness practice, like one for the general community, help people be happy?
Well, it may. It depends on the particular difficulty, the particular way the person has been trained, their own causes and conditions, sometimes called karma. You've noticed that some people come into this life and are just like pretty happy to be here all the time. There's some difficulty, but it goes away, doesn't last long, have a fairly high intelligence. Their upbringing is kind and supportive and loving. And even if they have some difficulty, the people that are their mother and father or their family or their community are supportive of them and help them. And the only thing that can come along and make that pretty miserable is intense illness or sickness, which is unpredictable, uncontrollable, or a person coming from into that milieu or that family who just blows everything up because of their confusion. They're covering up their own fear through aggression. So, but yes, I would say, are you pretty happy? Not usually. How do you define happiness? May I make a suggestion? Stop figuring and look at the unhappiness. This is done by looking at the first noble truth, life of suffering. You have to look right at that, your own version of that, because that is not separate from happiness. It's also delusion is not separate from Buddhahood. Have to see it. More questions? Go ahead.
Beyond Valley, you often say about this practice, chicken taza, in this context, there's nothing to be sold here. There's nothing to sell. So I'm wondering, with a community mindfulness center, one where we're kind of making an offering to the community, if there is something to sell, so to speak.
Yeah. Yes, more so there. Here you get it through the teachings of the Buddha, the three poisons, how we prevent ourselves or how we create our own suffering by fighting with things or agreeing with things or shutting down. You can get to that function. It takes a little while. First, the person has to be introduced to sitting meditation, but no promises. And we would talk about no promises so that the person could begin to see the nature of their own mind rather than looking for the goal. And there may be some goals. There's goals here. Enlightenment is a goal. Save all beings. That's a goal. But the way we work with that is much different than checking each other's. See, how close are you? Are you getting any closer? Well, the teacher told me I was up to about an 8. How much feedback do you get from me? Unless you're Senshu, of course. I give Senshu feedback. You notice she's not smiling? I guess that is a smile. More? Yeah. Sir?
Shodo bowing. I've read a little bit about like formal shamatha, how it's trained, and it looks like there's 9 stages that you would progress through.
The 9 stages of shamatha, yes. I'm not going to talk about those. But you can, if you know them, ask questions about them.
Does that culminate in a practice that's like shikantaza?
Or vipassana? Yes, but it's the issue I have with that is that it looks linear, and it looks like you do this in a linear way. And I practiced this a lot. I was very, very, what's the word, fussy about that back in the 70s and 80s under the guidance of my teacher, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. So the idea that is sometimes taught in a linear way, quite often, just like the 12 or the 10 bhumis, sometimes 11 or 12, it's taught in a linear way, but it's actually all those are happening in different ways at once. So those levels may be showing up, but they're not very dependable as far as this leads to that. It's just it's taught that way because that's the way people tend to receive things, is in a first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, that kind of education. Can you remember any of those stages? You just read them. Did you read those in retreat? Yeah. Who gave you that?
You did.
I did. Why would I give you something like that that I'm not teaching? Yes, you do.
Help me?
Everybody's starting to snicker. Of course, yes, to help you.
Why did you give me that retreat?
I just told you to help you. So look what's happening. You're asking questions about something I gave you to study. And people study some of what I'm saying. You're studying it now. But if you know anything about all the things we've studied here in the last 12, 15 years or whatever it's been every direction from the words, the so-called words of the Buddha in can you remember Digha Nikaya, Samyutta Nikaya? It's supposed to be the words of the Buddha. Including and then to Dogen or to contemporary teachers like Trungpa or Kobenchino Roshi or Charlotte Joko Beck or Suzuki Roshi. Yes.
The one thing I do remember and I found interesting is that it seemed as you go through the stages as it's taught, you're basically swinging from you're too excited or you're too disengaged, like laxity and elation.
Yeah, that's good. Good memory.
It makes me wonder, in shikantaza, is there some kind of too tight or too loose that we need to look at?
There is a laxity and elation, but you just watch it, and you don't do anything with it. And they have processes where you work with that in a more specific way. I'm not interested in doing it that way, though I've practiced that, but I'm practicing out of what I'm looking at. It might be not very, very helpful, but that's what I'm trying to help you with. I'm not saying those aren't valuable teachings. I think they were probably just like the Teach the 7 Points of Mind Training probably is very helpful specifically to some people at some times with one particular, two particular slogans, or maybe all 59 of them. But that teaching is, even before medieval times, it's very ancient. It goes back to what, the 13th, no, 12th century? I don't recall, but back in there somewhere. And it's powerful teaching, and there are different translations. There's lots of interpretations of it. You can read, you can spend a lot of time reading that, and then even spend even more time trying to practice those slogans, which are relative and absolute slogans. I'm glad I was able to answer your question. Do you have any further one? Okay. Yes, sir.
Do you have the mic? I think you said that we can't see this quickly. It's about seeing deeply. Can't be a quick study. What is it about seeing deeply that can't be done quickly?
You had different understanding of what deeply is, because deeply is not separate from the surface. Two different things, depth and surface. They're not similar. They're not the same. Did I mix that up when I said it? Are there any accountants in the room? Accountant, I can't understand what I just said. The surface and the depth, not separate. They're not the same. There's a similarity, but they're both separated and the same, or at the same level. That has to be seen. And until the ego mind is begins to settle down somewhere between laxity and excitation, I think was the word I would use there, between just being too flopped over and too stirred up, somewhere in the middle, called the middle way, that you actually stop grasping the self, rejecting yourself. Rejecting yourself is just as powerful an ego builder, being ashamed of yourself, being embarrassed. So even though sometimes in Buddhism, people receive Jukai, they acknowledge the difficult things that they've done through, what is the word that I avow? All of these negative things that I've done, I fully avow. And you say, I did that, but there's not really an apology there for it. Interesting area. More?
Do you mind? Is quickly a misunderstanding? Is it just not about time or duration?
Well, quickly, I'm just saying that we practice, and we practice for 3 months or 3 years or 7 years or something. There's quite often that I've been practicing, especially if you go into retreat in our tradition for a month or 2 weeks, 10 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or a month. Those are I don't know if people have probably sat longer than that. I'm not sure if they have or not. Kozan sat for a month, came out for a while, and then I sent her back in for a month and she still fired me. So apparently that didn't help her too much. Or maybe it did. Maybe it helped her transcend the need for a teacher. So it's fundamentally about working with spiritual materialism, trying to get somewhere using spiritual techniques. And you might say, I might say, or anybody might say, well, we're not going to get somewhere. Why would we do this? Good point. Go back to something that you get somewhere with. But this is a spiritual path. It's not about getting somewhere. It's more basic, more radical, and more minimal than that. It's about seeing who it is that even wants to get somewhere. It's about mistaken identity. So that's available to you. It's available to you. It's available to everyone here. If you're interested, we can probably help you with that.
Even bowing, if I'm endeavoring to look into like a ball of something that's balled up, like my idea of a ball of consciousness,
and yes,
there's this maybe sense that it dissolves, then where do you look?
Did you have that experience that it dissolved? Or you're just kind of going on and say, well, eventually this will dissolve, then what should I do? Well, then what are you asking?
Where do you look after the
consciousness? Let's see if the consciousness dissolves first before we say, where do you look? Like, if you need to get to Mars, you might want to go to the moon first. But once we get to the moon, then where do we go? It's like that kind of, I'm being a little silly with it, but I'm just saying, let's see what it is, because that may not dissolve. There's a presumption there that you're saying, once this dissolves, or once we see there's no self, when you see there is no solid self in the skandha, this form, feeling, perception, concept, and consciousness, that illusion may be twice as strong It might be incredible. It might come right out through your skin and fill up the room with me, 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 and my stuff, my ideas. And if you see that, you don't do anything with it. There is a name. If you're seeing that, you're witnessing it. What would that name be? What would characterize the consciousness that sees that they're full of it, that they're completely full of it all the time, everywhere? Have a name for that? I can give you one. If consciousness sees that complete self-deception and grasping and greediness without a story about it, you just see it and you don't push it away, you don't explain it, and you don't ignore it, it's called humility. You understand what I'm saying? Good. Then you have a ways to go.
I'd like to be more specific in my question.
Go ahead. Did you hear what I said? Can you repeat what I said?
No.
So you didn't really hear it? Can you paraphrase what I said?
No, I was thinking about
something else.
Yeah.
I'm aware of that. I watched you do it. I don't miss too much, but I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to help you. So in order to help you, I have to be very clear on who this so-called helper is and who this so-called person who might be able to use some help. And I have unlimited patience. And it's not a state of mind of being waiting for something. The patience is about intention. And intention has no terminal. But go ahead if you have another question.
Be unbowing. Well, now is an intense emotion an example of a ball of consciousness?
It can be, but there's going to be an intense emotion that just flows, that comes in, looks for a personhood and can't find it. It just comes through the mind stream, shows up, looks around. It's like wandering through an empty house and right out the back door. And while you're in there, while it's in there, it's felt by consciousness. But the consciousness is not concerned about getting rid of negative feelings. It's not concerned. This is consciousness only. It's not concerned about how it feels, because there is no it anymore. There's no person. There's just the negative feeling in consciousness. The duality of self and other, or someone and something felt, is gone. And there's just that. There's just direct perception of what this is. And it is not. It's not belonging to anyone. There's no boundary there.
Be unbowing. Now I'm wondering about the difference of emotions coming and going, and the difference of emotions arising and going.
I didn't follow you. Emotions coming?
Emotions coming and going, like through a house with no windows.
Yes.
Versus emotions sneaking into a house with lots of windows and just disappearing somewhere in there.
That's possible. It can be covered up. There's in one corner is a pile of blue rugs. Look under there. But when you do that, when I'm saying that, this is what Chikantaza is about. Looking around at all the cover-ups in that house before the windows eventually blow off. No doors, no windows. It's just an open dimension where consciousness comes and goes and just happens to have some kind of a structure there. It might be just toothpicks. But look at everything. Look in every corner. We're pushing this image quite a ways to try to get some kind of understanding out of it. But it's like that. It's not that exactly. That's the seventh consciousness, or the Klesha mind, that's talked about in the Yogacara tradition of the eight consciousnesses. It's about awareness. It's not about getting something or losing something or getting somewhere or pushing something or knowing who caused what. It's done with the awareness.
Be unbowing. Is there a difference, or can you know the difference between consciousness arising as a form and dissolving, or conscious arising as a form and hiding?
Consciousness can be talked about as arising, but it's more about what arises in consciousness. Everything is consciousness, and this arises, these hands arise, your thoughts, memories, emotions. From the point of view of Chikantaza, we just watch everything come and go. It may have a charge to it. It may have something extra hooked onto it. We just watch that. So I'm not sure what it is you want to know about that, but maybe we can go further if you have another question, or maybe just ask the same one again.
Yun Bain, from the point of view of Chikantaza, does it matter if we're watching something arise and dissolve, or arise and hide?
Yeah, well, if it hides, you won't know it. Because if you know it hides, then it's not hiding. You know it hides. But if you don't know it, if this is called ignorance, it's one of the three poisons. Something comes up, it's painful, you don't like it, it's threatening, or any other number of things. Or confusing or just troublesome. And you can, the simple way is just distract yourself. Look at something else. Think about something else. Go play golf. Go play badminton. Go for a walk. Do something. It's not incorrect to do that. It's totally appropriate to do whatever you need to do to relieve your suffering. But at the same time, or to relieve your boredom or to relieve threats, but at the same time, try to find some time to go the other direction, sit down and hold still and just receive whatever's showing up in that empty house with something it might be hiding. So that's why you can see it. You can do that. It can be threatening. It can be difficult, uncomfortable. But if you have, that's why we have something like the three jewels, that particular thing where there's a Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, the teacher, what is being taught, which is countless teachings down through the centuries about the Buddha's teaching. Not only the Buddha himself, but all Buddhist teachers. And then the community, which we have, we gather together just about every day in some form and have been for years and years. So, and that's a support. And studying together like we're doing now. So someone has not asked a question here in the monastery. Go ahead.
Yoko Bowing, I have a question on YouTube.
Go ahead.
From Martin in Latvia. How to let go of the part which shuts down or adds on to what shows up in meditation?
Don't let go of anything. Just as I've done this many times, just look at the way you're holding on. Observe the fascination, the fixation, and look at all of the things that are hanging on, all the ways in which we hang on, rather than try to let go. Letting go, you can accomplish something in that area, but what happens is you have a concept about what this is, and you let go of the concept. While deep in consciousness, there's still the tentacles are hanging on to something. Did I catch all of that question? So observe it, and then when you see it in its entirety, then there's a possibility that it could just relax. It wouldn't have any energy to hang on because it gets its energy from being agreed with, objected to, or ignored. Passion, aggression, ignorance. More? Shoka.
Shoka Bhan, can mindfulness be taught in a way that doesn't create a stable identity or have that linear progression that shows up?
Well, it can be taught that way, yes. But it depends on this, then it depends on the student, and it will be show up differently for different students. It completely can be taught that way. Yes.
I have very little experience with mindfulness, so how can somebody who's primarily practiced Chikantaza look at that or
look at mindfulness? Or just practice some mindfulness. Read, I don't particularly teach it. I can talk to you about it if you wish, but you can also read Trungpa's books on Shamatha Vipassana. There's lots of material out there on mindfulness, maybe more than anything. I've only practiced actual mindfulness practice for maybe 20, 25 years, I started out doing that, but then I went into practicing shamatha vipassana, or shini and laktung. And then I don't remember what the transition was or how it showed up, but just I just feel like this is what people need to start out with, vipassana. And then they may have to go to, it's not backing up, but then they may have to go to having a stronger form. But first, let's just do an open dimension. And interestingly enough, in 1973, when I first met Trungpa Rinpoche, the gymnasium we sat in, I rolled up my jacket and sat on it. There was no cushions there in the gymnasium. And the meditation practice that was taught there, it was more like Shikantaza. It was just sit. There was no instruction, just to sit still. I don't even think they said, watch your mind, but I didn't hear any breath training or anything. This is really early. And I think possibly Trungpa Rinpoche may have been, I don't know, I didn't talk to him about it, may have been trying to understand how he should go about teaching this to all these crazy hippies. I don't know. But you can study those three volumes of Trungpa Rinpoche's, and there's, especially in the first volume there, there's very definite instructions on shamatha practice. And what is it? How many stages is it? 9 stages of shamatha. And there's also antidotes to for drowsiness. And there's all kinds of corrective measures you can take so you can be more mindful. And you see me smile because I practiced a lot of that. But I don't teach it because I don't think that's necessary. I'm not disagreeing with Trungpa or Thich Nhat Hanh or John Kabat-Zinn or any or the teachers that what was the teacher that you had? Your
Goenka.
Yeah, what Goenka's teaching. Goenka was from India, and he was not a Buddhist, but he taught that to inmates in prisons. And if you go into a prison and or go anywhere and teach somebody to sit still for all day long for 10 days, there's going to be some terrific changes in what happens to them. But then the follow through on that is what was missing with Goenka. I'm not criticizing Goenka in the sense that he didn't help people. Of course he did. And his students are still helping people. So if you need to be there, you'll be there. You'll be studying in that way. You'll be studying mindfulness in that way. But that may not address the particular karma that you're dealing with as your mind stream, how it shows up for you in your life, or you in your life, or anyone. You may need more than that. I certainly did. Yes, sir.
Can mindfulness address that?
Mindfulness address what?
That area that you're talking about that is so specific, or
it is possible. Yes, it's possible for someone going to practice deity yoga and do it with creation completion practices. But there's a lot of just basic Mahamudra or Dzogchen style of just whatever shows up, Shikantaza, basically. The creation part is developing the mandala and the vision of the deity, which is and the vision of yourself as a deity and the deities in the different directions, and creating that deity and talking, interacting with that deity as an aspect of the wisdom mind. Might be able to do it that way. It's been said, they quite often brag about it, that you want to attain enlightenment in one lifetime. I'm not saying you can't. I just think it's interesting that they advertise that. Yes.
Well, Devon, what is the difference between awareness and mindfulness? You're saying that Shikantaza trains aware is a practice of awareness.
Awareness is more, you sit here and you just watch what moves. It's just like birds fly by, you look at them. Nothing flies by, you don't look at anything. Or you might watch your stomach growl, or then your elbow might start to hurt. So notice that. And then somebody walks in the other room and makes some noise with the pots and pans. I've noticed that you, but because you live here, can come into the Hojo and sit there with me, and you could tell me literally anybody that's moving anywhere in the building by the way they walk. You've been doing it for years now. You say, oh, that's Mozuku, or that's Abiyun, or that's Sokaran. So you know, have you noticed that? Is everyone doing the same thing? I don't think so. So if you're walking around in here, she not only can tell you or tell me who it is that's moving around, she could tell what you're thinking about. You tell me that one time. Yes. Silkaran.
Did your practice prior to Shikantaza build a foundation or lead you into insights that you then use for Shikantaza?
I can see where you might think that or something, but the linear quality has gone out of it. This is everything just returned to what it actually is before I got here. There's still a person here. I'm not trying to say I have some kind of a super consciousness or cosmic awareness or something like that. I'm just saying I know what I'm looking at. And I don't, the practice that seemed to be the most helpful to me is called Mahamudra in the Tibetan tradition, or Dzogchen, or in the Japanese tradition, Shikantaza. But they're all, I don't say they're exactly identical. I wouldn't say that, but if there's nothing happening, but you're just looking at it, whatever shows up, you're just looking at it, it's pretty similar. Mahamudra, the great symbol, Maha, great, mudra, symbol, great symbol, great, the great display of everything, not separate. Dzogchen, the great perfection, nothing wrong anywhere, nothing to fix. Shikantaza, just precisely this. Sound kind of similar. But I don't, one thing didn't lead to the other so much. It didn't have a relative construct there. And the other thing I would say, and this is something that, if you say, well, explain what you mean by that, I really can't, but I can say it this way. Nothing happened. There is no occurrence. When you see there's no self in the skandhas, there's no one to experience it, to have an experience. Experiences come and go, but there's no person anymore. And although it may see the you looking at the person who talks in that way, as this old man is doing, may look like they have a really distinct and obvious ego or self-centeredness, because they see everything as unreal. So they're not concerned how they appear. And they're not really concerned with outcomes. That's relative shit. They're concerned with the vow. If they're a Buddhist, they're concerned with the vow that they received. And they, if they're practicing in the way I understand it, their vow is to be with all things. And when students come this way, to be with that student, you have to help them in a way that fundamentally helps them, not just does it for them. More?
So, Brent, bowing, there's an emphasis in the mindfulness community or even the transcendental community about experiences and transcendental experiences.
Yes, I know.
Are those evidence of progress?
Yes, as long as you need the progress. You might need this mindfulness center next door that's happening. We're going to have to talk about progress there. We just aren't going to talk about it in here particularly, and other than the way you're asking the question. So people come on here and they either, this makes sense to them, or they think, oh, they need something else. I've had students come and practice with me for several years and then say, I can't, the way you're teaching this, I can't do this. I have to go back to my teacher. I can name what the people I'm talking about. I have to go back and do this another way, and go ahead, do it another way. But yes, when someone would come into the mindfulness center next door, which hopefully will come together, and we'll have, and people will come. Yes, you would talk about that. You might even again, what I would say is you talk to the persons there. You would see what kind of help they needed. And then you could be encouraging relative to that situation, not just have a blanket standard that everybody does this, like they do with the boomies and with the stages on the path and all that. I think it's very necessary to teach to the individual. Someone comes in and sits down and you relate to them, just like you do as an acupuncturist or a practitioner of Chinese medicine. You know, it's very much the chemistry between you and the person who comes in and what your skill set is as far as acupuncture, Chinese medicine, or however you'd want to characterize it. Have you noticed how it really is about your connection with that person? And this is why it's hard to trap that kind of stuff and really turn it into money or turn it into control, because it's so spacey, wouldn't you say? It is. It's very intuitive, that kind of work. Same thing with teaching meditation, especially if you've been doing it a long time and you're no longer contained by your own image. You're no longer concerned about making people think you're enlightened. Then you can actually meet the person in their confusion. And that may not be comfortable for you or for them. That may not be comfortable for them or for you. Got that one. And same thing with what you do. It's not always comfortable, but you just do the best you can with the various things that you need to juggle or move around or shift. And so you're always ready to modify this or change that. You're not locked down by standards at all, either your own or Chinese medicine or acupuncture. Same thing with mindfulness. But we would start out with a basic practice that we would teach someone. You might meet someone that, after talking to them, say if you were teaching over there and this shows up, you might talk to someone a little bit and realize they really could practice Shikantaza. You would teach them it. Yeah. Okay, I think I've ignored people on Zoom here, so I would like to see if there is someone here on Zoom that has a question. Jixin, I can always count on you. Go ahead, Jixin.
Jixin Bowing. What is the work of humility?
Bowing. What is the what?
The work of humility.
I don't know. Look it up. I don't know what it means.
No, not the what's that mean? What is the work of humility? How does it work?
Oh, how does humility work?
Yes.
No, there could be a whole lot of things that have gone haywire that you see that you have done, and that is part of your particular incarnation that you know you can't fix. You can't just be a higher being, but you also are without a self. And at the same time, you have all this rigmarole that's been going on in your life that has been difficult. And you see the difficulty you created and caused for others, and you realize that any appearance of someone that can do something or fix that or push this or apologize for that or get forgiven for this. Apologies and forgiveness is just bullshit. And if you disagree in some way, I'm here. Come to me and apologize. Now, you have to understand that creates a stronger dynamic between self and other. That does not mean that you don't apologize just out of politeness for bumping into somebody or taking their, in the kitchen out here, coming in and their meal's prepared for someone who needs a late plate, and you eat someone's food. It doesn't mean, I'm sorry about that. I misunderstood. I'm not saying you don't do that, but you don't make some kind of a structure out of apologizing for everything. Or waiting to be let off the hook. There is no hook. Even humility is just a way of talking about the complete loss of a self. Sometimes this is called by the genuine heart of sadness. It's sad to realize how crazy you've been or what has happened and what happens in the world out of just incredible insanity. And you can't march into the middle of that insanity. You have to go into this insanity. See this one first rather than trying to fool around with people out there. This doesn't mean you wouldn't go and volunteer someplace and help people who seem to be basically humanists in their approach, trying to take care of other people. Help people out. Help people in the Sangha. Help people in the community. Help people next door if they're able to receive that. What the fundamental practice is here. Humility. More?
Thank you. You were talking about surface and depth.
Yes.
What is the surface and what is the depth?
The surface is up here and the depth is on the other side. So if you look if you went into a lake, you swam to the bottom, that would be the surface of the depth. And then if you swam up to the top, that would be the depth of the surface. Because you had to go up to get to it.
Does humility
You're not going to give up, are you? Go ahead.
Does it work on the depth level bowing?
The depth in a Lego?
No. The depth of, I don't know actually, to when you talk about surface and depth, do you refer to what?
So it's, I didn't say depth. I said depth.
Depth, yes.
Okay.
Yes, this is my question.
So the surface is here. This is where the waves are. And the depth is down there where you hit bottom, where the whales sleep. That's, yeah. Now, what is it you want to know using those images? Don't give me a hard time here now.
When you are describing by using those terms, what do you describe?
It's just another way of talking about non-dual, about understanding when you, anytime you have a polarity, that one side of something, you also you create just by the nature of manifestation. You create, or you assume, or you have to acknowledge that there's the other side of that. So the surface and the depth, it's just a way of talking about it. It's not anything particularly fancy, may not even be helpful to you.
Does it describe the mind?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure does.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, I think we should let everyone say bye-bye.
Hi, my name is Sokaren, and I'm one of Sokuzan's monks. Sokuzan so freely offers his love to us and his wisdom through these talks, and never asks us for anything in return. If you value what he does and what he is, and want them to continue, please visit our donate page at sokukoji.org. Thank you.